presentations today. One is from county staff, and then others are from our customers. So what I think would be helpful is to go around and introduce ourselves just so that everybody knows who's at the table and who's presenting. I'll start. I'm Kathleen Otto, HR Director and the Deputy County Manager.
John Blum, County Counsel.
Eileen Quiring, County Counsel.
Julie Olson, County Counsel.
Mark Polk, County Counsel.
Christine Connolly, Kittleson and Associates.
Steve Hornstein, representing Kelly Pacific.
Randy Fritz, Lanterhome, representing Holt.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis, representing Mr. Wallum and Mr. Hinton.
Lance Killian with Kelly Pacific, landowner and developer.
Heath Henderson, Clark County Public Works Director.
And Oliver Ojako, Community Planning Director.
Christine Cook, Civil PA.
Okay, so I think the first presentation is from the county.
Thanks for coming, everyone. And while we do have two presentations, we really kind of worked on this together. Really want to share some information. Our goal today is really to hear about the progress that we've made on this private-public partnership out in this area of 179th Street and I-5 in this effort to lift urban holding and promote development out in that area. So we've started to make some pretty good progress as of late. And we'll first start off with just a quick reminder of the urban holding process and how that works, and Oliver will talk about that.
Thank you, Heath, and good morning, councilors. Urban holding, councilors, is a tool used by Clark County to face growth under the Growth Management Act. That's really what it is. And in the Vancouver urban growth boundary, or urban growth area, the 179th Street and the I-5 corridor is the last remaining area that is in urban holding. As you know, to remove urban holding, it is a comprehensive plan amendment or a type 4 legislative process which requires going before the Planning Commission and then coming to the Council for your review and approval, making a findings that the criteria to lift urban holding has been met. So we're going to be having a conversation on phase one of the Killian application that is in process that we are reviewing. The Planning Commission scheduled to hear that is August 16th for a work session, and then September 6th for a hearing.
First, we thought just there, obviously, we have there's kind of three parts to what's going on out here. There's obviously there's the state project actually at the 179th Street I-5 interchange. We're, you know, been coordinating with the various developments in the area, and then there's a series of county road projects going on. So I thought I'd start with just an update on the 179th Street I-5 interchange project. It's currently in a practical design process, and the practical design is actually a requirement of the Connecting Washington funds, which is a pretty prescriptive process to go through. Just current high-level analysis, and we'll show some maps later. Kittleson will show this concept we're talking about, shows the idea of roundabouts on either side of the existing bridge and not rebuilding the existing bridge. We have traffic modeling in process right now, and I believe the team working on this with the state, and they can throw things at me if they'd like, but I think we're shooting for the end of 2018 to have that process completed.
Heath, when we talk about the high-level analysis and maybe the rebuild of the bridge and the overpass, there's still going to be improvements on and off.
Yes. Yeah. The improvements.
It's not county.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes,
so
that's correct.
The
ramps and the terminuses of the on and off ramps tend to be the focus, and then modifying how traffic moves underneath the bridge. Funding associated with that effort, actually the state just had $500,000 made available to them to begin the design process, and the remaining $50 million is still currently scheduled out in 2023-2025. The county capital projects, some of these are going to be familiar. It's just kind of a reminder of the ones we have out there, which is basically improvements along 179th in particular. That kind of dovetails with realigning Delfeld Road, which currently actually comes in alongside of one of the off-ramps, the southbound off-ramp that would likely be realigned behind the Chevron out there. Those are two projects that are kind of shown together here. And then we have the extension of 15th Avenue, which goes from the north where it is now, kind of cross-country, and connects back into 10th Avenue. So we have estimated costs for these projects for the 179th and Delfell Road, $28 to $30 million. These are high-level costs. And then about $15 million for 15th Avenue. So, and later we'll talk about some work that Kittleson and the development team has done to kind of hone in on some costs for development or improvements specific to the developments out there and how the county can contribute.
So is 15th then the direction going forward? I know there was some discussion about some other alternatives potentially given the mitigation that might have to take place there.
We don't have the final answer on that right now. It's still in progress. So obviously with this, there'll be a county portion of the improvements out there. And right now, I think we've talked a lot about the past, is that there's a funding gap there, likely even with the private-public partnership. So we've been looking at various funding. There's a variety of potential funding sources that we'll be looking at. And as we zone in and kind of clearly identify what the county portion is, it'll become more clear which option we could use. Obviously, there's county road funds, traffic impact fees. We've used the traffic impact fee surcharge in some locations to help move development along. Obviously, we've talked about REIT 2, and we have our transportation improvement program work session next week, and we're proposing using some REIT in this area to move projects along. Private contributions, we have the Public Works Trust Fund loans that are pending. We always apply for state and federal grants. There's the Connecting Washington funding right now that's really kind of tailored towards the interchange itself. You may remember years ago there was talk, there was the local revitalization financing, which was a sales tax initiative. We're still eligible for that. The challenge there has been is that in order to meet the thresholds, we would actually have to see approximately $50 million worth of construction improvements in a given year in order to make that work. So the likelihood of that, it's a challenge to make happen, but it's still something we can dig into a little bit more. Latecomers agreements. We haven't used those a lot in the past, but it's something we can do. They're typically used on water sewer type projects, but they can be used on transportation. Transportation benefit district, this is the probably more commonly known as the $20 tab fees when you go to register your car. The City of Vancouver and the City of Battleground have both passed these initiatives. They're typically focused more on the preservation side of things and managing existing assets. So in this case out here where you have, you're basically, it's all going to be new, so that having a benefit district under that premise may not be the appropriate tool. And then there's also been discussion of bonding, and in discussions with the budget office and finance, the county has plenty of bonding capacity. The big question there would be, when you bond, what's the payback plan? So again, there's more discussion to come on these. We're getting closer to having some numbers. That's kind of a next step in the process that we've been working on. And then a little bit on, and Lance and Kittleson will go more into these developments, but the development agreement status and schedule, this is kind of the list as how they sit right now, is we have the original 60,000 square foot retail proposed by Killian, which was approved in the development agreement. We have the Three Creeks North Phase 1 development, which is will be discussed more here, which is the residential piece on the north side. That development agreement is in progress right now. We have a draft, and so we're getting very close to having that complete.
Heath, the nature of Three Creeks North, commercial or residential?
Residential.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mixed use.
Sorry.
And already zoned. Appropriately.
Yes.
No change.
Yes. Yeah. The only restriction is urban holding. There's the Killian remainder, excuse me, the Northeast 179th Street commercial, which was also approved in phase two or was it considered phase two and previously approved in the developer's agreement that's on the south side, 179th. Then we have the Holt Development Mill Plain PUD, which is additional residential homes, the Hinton property, and the Wallen property. And with the work, the groundwork that's been done on Killian Three Creeks phase one, we feel like the next phases that will be easier. It'll be a model for the next ones as they come through.
And these residential pieces are on both sides of the freeway.
That's correct, yeah. And I think as we move into the next presentation, I think Lance and his team will show you exactly where those are. So,
hey, Heath, so as we talk about, I guess, the bigger picture of the roundabouts and the whole project, I mean, I think what we talked, you know, back on 119th, there was a smaller area, but we also realized that we're building this project, like 179th, we're building this clear up to 72nd and all of that. So when we start thinking about this, it's just not really the developers that's going to benefit from this. It's the whole county.
Right.
So,
ultimately, improvements to this interchange, the users come from a wide range of areas,
yeah.
And ultimately, with urban holding lifted in the area completely, there'll be a lot of development in the area.
Well, in addition to what's already happening at that intersection,
yes.
Around the fair and concerts and,
yes.
And
right.
Moving
yes.
Vehicles in and out of that area already.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that as the traffic modeling is being done, that's being considered.
Okay.
So I think with that, we can move on to introduce Lance. We'll start the next presentation, and I'll
okay.
Great.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and get started. But just as sort of an agenda on our side, I'm sort of speaking on behalf of the list that you just saw, so Wollum and Holt and ourselves, relative to the presentation at Kittleson. We've all engaged Kittleson, traffic engineering firm, to model all of the work collaboratively. So we've sort of come together as a pipeline group to help facilitate moving things forward. But I think it's important. We have years now, way beyond a decade of experience working collaboratively with the county on this particular area, specifically as it relates to, earlier was referenced, the LRF effort. At that time, we were a key part, and actually the majority of our property comprises most of the LRF area that was identified and passed by this council approved in 2009. So we're over 10 years, it's sad to say at this point, trying to help resolve the infrastructure challenge that has existed and de facto moratorium for over 10 years now in this part of the county. So I'm not only here speaking on behalf of our group that's been identified, but just as a refresher in some context, it was a collaborative effort to help facilitate getting the state funds for the interchange approved, and there was a letter that we were a part of and many others that was submitted in 2015 that I can pass out copies of. But just as a refresher, some of the people that signed this effort that was this letter that was sent to Curtis King and Judy Cliburn, the state legislature. So you had Neil Kimsey at Clark Regional Wastewater District. You had WSUV, Mel signed this. You had John Morrison at the Fairgrounds, Clark County Fairgrounds. You had Bryce at Legacy Salmon Creek Medical Center. You had Identity Clark County. You had the BIA sign this. Brent Grenning at the Port of Richfield. Ron Arp on behalf of Southwest Washington Freight and Commerce Task Force. And then the Clark County Association of Realtors. So all of those parties were, March 2015, recognized the dire need for transportation investment in this area, along with several other private property owners and representatives thereof. So I'm happy to pass these around, copies of that. But there was some reference, Mark and Julie, I think you both touched on the economic development potential of this area. I think that's also important to sort of reflect on here. As Johnson Economics, who does work for both public and private parties in cities and counties in the Pacific Northwest, completed a study in August 2015 They looked at this gateway sort of area to the Discovery Corridor, and their study showed assumed development capacity of vacant urban holding and a property that is underutilized that would be redeveloped, 4,100 acres, developable acres. They had assumed a 20-year horizon for build-out, and over that 20-year on a discounted net present value basis, the revenue that would flow to the county was $686 million. So I guess the point here, if we're trying to put ourselves in your shoes, is you have to invest money to make money, and it looks like, based on information that's been done in the past, and I know the county's done some of their own work in this regard too, that this would be a very high return investment from an infrastructure perspective. So I'll pass out copies of this also. So we have come together, the group that's here today has come together to present to you what we see as viable alternatives to start to get some of this infrastructure on the ground. And our goal is to sort of put forth things that wouldn't be normal in the development process to help provide this sort of public-private collaboration to help get things done sooner rather than later. And Kittleson's going to be providing the guts of sort of the technical side of what we think needs to happen to break loose some capacity to start get things going there. There was, we participated in the lobbying effort for the funding for the interchange at the state level, and the thinking, I think, continues. The strategy from a political perspective was the more that we locally can get on the ground in terms of the infrastructure that connects to the interchange, the better we position ourselves as a community to ask that the state funds, which are now in the 2023 to 2025 biennium, could potentially get pulled forward and hopefully get the improvements done at the interchange themselves sooner rather than what they're currently scheduled for. So thank you very much for the time today. We really, really appreciate it, and we hope to continue to garner your support in this collaboration and getting some things done out there. Just as context, one last comment would be, it's not just us at the table here. There are, I know personally, several property owners in the area. I was just talking to a commercial business yesterday who just in the last week closed on a piece of commercial property in this area, and they want to build a 100,000 square foot facility to serve their needs, but they're calling me asking, what's the latest? When can we potentially do something? So I think we're a very small piece of the potential that exists for this immediate area. So we're sooner rather than later is, I think, in order here from an economic development perspective. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Christine at Kittleson, and she's going to run you through sort of our more formal presentation.
I guess from your perspective, since you've been in this, when we started the old stormwater days, I guess, mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's easy to look from the, upper view, and then we tend to get in the weeds too much and we forget the upper view. So your perspective of us keeping this view and let you get in the weeds, but we're not a weed board, so.
Oh, yes, we are.
No pun intended there. Yeah.
Depends on the day.
Right. So I'm not 100% sure I understand your question, but I'll take a whack at it. I mean, I think what we need to have happen at this point is the county, and Heath walked through, all of the different various tools. Some may be more appropriate than others here, but there's going to be a gap between what the private sector is able to contribute for these infrastructure fixes and what the county, through whatever means, needs to come up with to actually make them happen. And so the ideal situation would be that the county, through whatever means, is able to find the funding to put, as soon as possible, get as many of these improvements on the ground.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that?
Very good. Yeah.
Is that, okay.
Okay. Once again, I'm Christine Connolly. I'm a traffic engineer with Kittleson & Associates. And we've run some analysis of what might be necessary in this area to allow development in the meantime before the ultimate interchange improvements are in place. And it sounds like most of you were looking for a map. This shows the four major developments that we're looking at with this analysis, four of the larger developments in the area. You've got the Killian property here. This is the 179th Street commercial property that's been approved. And then to the north here is the Three Creeks North residential that's in process. He mentioned that the development agreement is almost underway. You've got Holt, which we're calling Mill Creek PUD, and then to the south here, the Hinton property, and then west of the interchange, the Wallum development.
And that north-south is 50th Avenue on the west of the Holt group.
This is 29th, and this is 50th here.
And just for clarity, are you contracted with these property owners on their transportation matters?
Yes.
And study?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I just want to point out a very minor thing, but in case you looked at this first handout, it says Mill Plain PUD. And I could not quite picture where that would be in conjunction with 179th. So just a little correction. Thanks. It's Mill Creek.
Here are the four developments in a little more detail. We generated trips for the PM peak hour for these developments. The PM peak is the critical analysis period. That's where we're experiencing the most existing congestion as well as the higher trip generation. And this is the rundown of these four developments. What this table doesn't include is the future Three Creeks North commercial area, which is the middle, just north of 179th right here. Here's a concept plan of the what may be the ultimate solution for the interchange that WSDOT will be constructing in several years. The area in orange are the two interchange ramps, and then east of that area is a potential roundabout corridor. I don't think any of this has been finalized. In conjunction with these developments, we looked at what might be necessary as a phased improvement schedule to allow the development to occur in the meantime before this interchange is in place. And what we found was that by cul-de-sacking, the 10th and Union here, you can free up a lot of capacity at the northbound ramps, primarily in the eastbound direction. People who were turning left onto 10th were getting congested and bogged down. But by removing that connection and shifting it further to the east, you're freeing up a lot of capacity there. You're also allowing the northbound lanes on the off-ramp to be used for left and right turning traffic and removing the through movement. We're widening to four lanes east of the interchange as well. And then in conjunction with the Killian development, this roundabout would connect back to 10th Street, or 10th Avenue, I apologize. And then some further widening until you get to, this is 15th Avenue. This includes the addition of a right turn lane and then a left turn lane to increase capacity there as well. This would remain signalized in these phased improvements.
So is that 10th Avenue piece, that would be permanent, that 10th Avenue to the north?
I think the ultimate solution in this area is yet to be determined. a potential future situation in which the 15th Avenue is the connection has been discussed, but in terms of this immediate next five-year plan, this would be sufficient.
The fastest and easiest way to give it to you. And I, just for the purpose of a little bit of background, with regard to roundabouts, we see them everywhere more and more often, and you're the traffic expert. Could you just take a minute or two and talk about why roundabouts rather than other intersection-type mitigation measures?
Mm-hmm. So the primary benefit of a roundabout is that nobody, in theory, has to stop. So you can get a lot more traffic through a roundabout than you can through a signal because you're not delaying movements that when there's no conflicting traffic. So this roundabout here also allows for U-turns, which is a benefit to the area. People who have accidentally gone in the wrong direction don't have to turn into driveways or developments along the road because they have this clear solution to make a U-turn at the roundabout. Another reason for the roundabout here is that a roundabout interchange has been proposed at the 179 I-5 interchange, and roundabout corridors generally work best when you don't stick a signal in the middle stopping traffic.
And so how do we or you answer to like large truck traffic or fire trucks or emergency vehicles with regard to engineering these roundabouts, especially on, in and along the freeways?
Can I add transit to that list too?
Yes. Roundabouts are designed for larger trucks. So in the center of the roundabout, I'm not sure if it shows up very well, but you've got the green center, and then around that you see a red-ish circle. That's the truck apron, sorry. And so as a truck is going through or a larger vehicle, they're allowed to, their wheels can step onto that apron so that they have a radius of turn that's able to accommodate the larger vehicle.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So here's a text list of the improvements I just described. We've estimated the cost of just these phased improvements that you see in this picture to be about $20.6 million. This is exclusive of right-of-way costs without survey and topo on this roadway. We are unable to estimate the right-of-way cost quite yet.
So the I-5, or I'm sorry, the 179th widening east of I-5, how far does that go to 50th then, or would that, how far east would that widening go? Just to here, to 15th?
So at 15th, the widening would just extend far enough to allow for construction of this left turn lane here. Okay. So these improvements, once again, I want to reiterate that these accommodate we've shown through traffic analysis that these will accommodate those four developments that we listed in the table at the beginning of this presentation. This cost does not include off-site mitigation required for concurrency. Those mitigations are being identified through individual traffic impact analyses for the developments, some of which have already been submitted and some of which will be submitted soon. Once we ran, we assigned the trips to the network and ran a capacity analysis. These are the percent capacity that we're using at each of these intersections. As you can tell, the roundabout is approaching capacity but still under 92%. And again, this is the PM peak hour.
So, I think one thing to keep in mind too about this is this is on full build.
So that's after the build,
yes.
Not now.
So that leads me, I guess, to another question then with regard to some of these other properties that are in urban holding that aren't included in these ones we identified today. would these improvements also allow those to be removed from urban holding? What's that?
There'll be some excess. This will create some excess capacity. It would create enough capacity to for the entire area out there to be removed. So probably the interchange.
Right. But it'll help alleviate. It'll help provide some capacity to move other properties from.
And there'll be other projects they can undertake in the city too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I guess my question would be, after hers, and it would probably be for Oliver and Heath, is that when we remove urban holding, we remove, you know, the gates out, the gates open, you know. So when we say there'll be other projects, are we designing some of this stuff for other people? Or are you just designing it for the projects that we see? So what I don't want to see is we open up urban holding and we make small, you know, even if the county has to put some money in it, I understand, but we got to design it for urban holding.
The answer to that is that this group has, particularly Holt and Killian, have been at this for a long time.
Right.
So there is no way that any of us individually or even this group collectively could fund infrastructure to facilitate to serve the entire area out there. I mean, it would be far, far more than, it would be 10 times the need of these projects. So the county and this crew started down the road of trying to get dollars for the interchange with right. the state legislature. Yeah. And we worked on that, both sides collectively. Legislators were supportive, but if you saw the timing of things that what Heath put up, it's still, and you know how the funding up there works, it's maybe 23, hopefully 25, maybe 20. So we started to, that's, you know, we're, some of this may not even be around by then. So we said, are there some other solutions here? Can we take this in smaller bites? And can we create enough for some things to go forward? And so the answer to your question, Commissioner Bolt, is not all of urban holding would get removed. Mm-hmm. The people that are, at least currently, the people that are sort of at the table who are putting dollars for to get this
right.
done, putting
okay.
private
yeah.
sector dollars uh-huh. up, would, you know, assuming we could figure this out here collectively, urban holding on those properties would get removed, and they would make the financial contributions to this. And as time goes on, when the interchange gets funded or more dollars from other private sector partners come to you, there may be other interim solutions that can create more capacity, like 15, for example. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
That's not been working.
The only other comment I would add to that is that we purposely, this is taken longer than probably any of us would have liked, because to get to this point, we've wanted to avoid the situation where there's a private group that comes in and does some improvements, but they don't match with what the state and or the county needs to do relative to the interchange or the off-interchange transportation infrastructure. So what we're trying to do is continue to collaborate and make sure whatever the phasing looks like, this is a phase, you know, this would be phase one of trying to get everything done, that as much as possible it matches what the ultimate, when everything's done, looks like. So that's been the objective, I think, of all parties through this. So although it won't open all of it, like this is the
right.
We're biting off a big chunk and hopefully building and getting it all done quickly.
I'm just saying from past painful experiences of saying, all right, we have these four people, and then we say, all right, we're going to accept one more, and then you never get to an answer.
Well, keep in mind, these are interim improvements. The 15th Street solution is going to create a lot more capacity, or a permanent 12th Street
okay.
solution that wouldn't
yes.
look like this.
I see.
It's going to take
okay.
more capacity. And also keep in mind that absent the private players here, who are going to be contributing right away and
right.
dollars,
oh, I mean,
it would just become a much more expensive project for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, too, just about these projects and and the possibility of other private property owners that want to get into this. What is the process if there are some that want to be a part of this? Do they petition, or how do they do that?
It's the same process that we've been through. We've been at this for many, many years, and we started the process by coming forward to you and making some proposals, and we've been at this kind of ad nauseum.
The short answer is that somebody would, or some group of folks just like us, would come to the county and say, hey, we know we need to create X amount of transportation capacity for our development, and here's how we think we can do it. And we're going to fund part of it, or whatever the solution to that is, and then ask the county, if we do those things, would you remove a holding on our property so that we can go? That's the process.
So likely if a private property owner has 10 or 20 acres, they're going to have to go to a developer to have
until the long term, until the interchange.
That's really the question I have.
Yes.
I said, I mean, because we're considering lifting this, is then we also have other property owners that are very interested in it as well. So that was my question.
Depending on the amount, the dollar amount of the improvements, though, you may need another group of property owners.
Yes.
Yes. The one way I would look at that, Councilor Querying, would be this is a model that can be replicated with additional property owners sort of banding together like these four have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, this group has done a lot of the heavy lifting for whoever comes next, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Or the county expedites and puts in place the off-interchange improvement sooner rather than later.
Right.
There's a path there to opening up.
And then we go back to looking at those funding sources that you presented before.
Exactly. So, I mean, you look at, because you look at this general vicinity, I mean, the major improvements that are needed, we're looking at more specific ones to kind of get things moving forward, but the ones we showed, Delphel Road, the interchange improvements to 179th, and then the extension of 15th are kind of the big infrastructure improvements that are needed to lift urban holding.
Okay.
One thing to note is the modeling for this area has been consistent for about 10 years now, and so the process we went through with these four developments is the same as what's been previously approved for the original Killian study. And so given specifics with other future developments, those trips could also be added to determine whether this has adequate capacity or what additional improvements could be done to allow for that to occur. Not just capacity, we looked at queuing, especially given the limited distance between the interchange ramps. And so I just wanted to briefly show you that we are still, with the addition of these developments that we're looking at, we're still acceptable queuing conditions at the interchange. We're not exceeding the storage length for the southbound ramp, and the left turn lanes here have sufficient capacity to store vehicles in both directions without backing into each other and causing blockage on the through lanes. And this is just a comparison of these phased improvements that we're recommending and the ultimate solution in the area down the line. In orange is shown the interchange ramps to be improved 2023 to 2025 with the Washington State DOT project. And then the pink is a little bit more of an unknown. I think as development occurs, the ultimate solution there will become more clear. But there's potential to connect to 10th via North Leg at this intersection. A roundabout has been proposed, and then some further widening to the east to 4 to 5 lanes on 179th. Mm-hmm. And these phased improvements do not preclude future improvements in the area. Okay. That's all I have.
What's our next steps then?
A couple comments.
Oh, okay.
That I'd like to make. One, basically, I left you with sort of two thoughts on all this.
Randy, could you get on?
Oh, sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah. Better?
Yeah.
One would be, this is not what we're, this exercise is not novel. The county and various cities within the county have done this numerous times. Steve and I, unfortunately, are old enough to remember the Pipeline One projects on 164th, and which are now, I don't know, 25 years ago, when a group of developers got together in conjunction with Clark County and funded tens of millions, more than that, of infrastructure that literally created 164th and all of those intersections. There was private participation in that. There was public participation in that. 119th, which is more recent, which some of you are familiar with. Again, you had a group of developers came to the county and said, we've got a problem out there. How can we fix this? So there was lots of analysis that was collectively done. We figured out a funding solution. There were development agreements that were entered into in both of those cases. And there were subsequent people that came. And there was another series of development agreements from developers who came, you know, who came next. And all of that worked. City of Vancouver, we did the chalk line overlay like this. Fifth Plain Creek, which some of you are familiar with, was very, very similar to the Holtz project here. The other thing is, you know, sort of, why are we doing this? And somebody may ask you guys, well, so is this just to, are we doing this just so a couple of developers can, you know, can go forward with their projects? And the answer to that's actually no. The reason that we do this is, number one, we have a comp plan that the county spent 5 or 6 years putting together $3.8 to $4.1 million worth of work that goes into that to satisfy the state's requirements that every county provide enough developable land to support the population projections that they get. And that's why we do this. If you don't do this, in fact, there was an article, I think, in the Business Journal the other day about the shortage of land and land costs and their impacts on housing and affordable housing. You take this area that the comp plan says is supposed to be developed, and that was 2006, and we are now in 18, and none of, and this area is still in holding. So what happens is you start putting extreme pressure on other portions of that are right outside of the UGA to move the boundary, because we are running out of developable land, and if we can't fix it inside the boundary, you're actually legally required. In fact, the market is going to make you add land somewhere else to your next UGA update, which is totally contrary to the fundamental premise of the Growth Management Act and Smart Growth, which is to preserve farm and open space, reduce sprawl, and to create, you know, cohesive, efficient, denser development inside the UGA. Mm-hmm. That's why you do this.
So I'm glad you brought up 164th Avenue, because I think one of, looking at that area now, one of the smartest things that was done at that time was setting aside or having some land right there at the interchange for the Fisher's Landing Transit Center, which is now one of C-Trans' most used sites. So I would hope as we're moving forward with this that we're involving C-Trans in the conversation and looking at where would a similar site in this development area, what, you know, where would be a good spot for that, and start planning that now before we get too far and it becomes an afterthought. Just looking at the number of homes and the amount of business, we've seen tremendous growth on 164th, and this is going to look like 164th 20 years after this development starts. So planning for that now as opposed to later, I think, is important.
I just want to express a concern on the estimated, this is a development summary, these pages aren't numbered, but in peak PM hour trips, So the assumption here is that, for example, 129 single-family homes generate one trip in peak hour. These really seem low to me compared to transportation estimates that I've seen over the last 20 years. So I have a little bit of concern about that, only in this sense. When we're determining peak hour trips, we're expecting the transportation infrastructure to manage that total number of peak hour trips. So those seem a little low.
So all of these estimates are consistent with the Institute of Transportation Engineers publishes a guide that's based on research that's been conducted over many, many years that estimates these rates based on data that's been collected at similar developments. So this one trip for PM peak is consistent with what is actually occurring at other single-family developments across the United States.
Well, I'm going to say that in 20 years of looking at transportation requirements and peak trips, these seem low. I'll leave it with that.
I can tell you that, and you asked the question about did Kittleson just do the work for us, for this group? And the answer is they did do the work for us. They also have done a great deal amount of work for the county, including for this area. The ITE manual that Christine talked about is used every day in every jurisdiction in the state of Washington, the state of New York, the state of Florida. It is, unless you're deviating from those numbers, it's virtually impossible to sort of cook the books because those numbers are generated region-wide, countrywide, and they're used every day by every traffic engineer in the country. So they are neither conservative nor nor liberal. They are the numbers. It's literally doing the math.
And Councillor Bolt, you asked the question, what is the next steps? If I may, it will be a finding because I gave you the schedule for Planning Commission work session and hearing for phase one. So it will be a finding in conjunction with the DA that we can ascertain that the project that we've identified that it can be reasonably funded. We have to make that finding, and that is going to be incorporated with the DA that is still in the works. And, that's when we go to the Planning Commission, that's going to be part of the next steps.
And when is that, Planning Commission?
The work session is August, and the hearing is September. I think I went through that. August 16th is the work session, and then the hearing before the Planning Commission is September 6th. And we have not yet scheduled your own hearing.
The process to get to reasonably funded, I mean, we've got $20.6 million on the table. How do we figure out the math from there to who does what? How do we pay for it?
So that would be another next step. So now we have, so I think with a lot of the work that they've done, we've had this number that says, in order to move these developments forward, we estimate $20.6 million in improvements. And then there's obviously portions of that the developers will contribute to. And then what comes out of that is the county portion and what's that dollar amount. And depending on what that is I think when we come back to the council and would recommend we propose funding this in this way. And depending on what that number is, it might be a combination of the available tools. And then we would ask for concurrence on that. And if with concurrence, and we could determine that it's reasonably funded.
How do them two, when them two, do them two hit the Planning Commission at the same time?
Yes. A lot of this stuff has to happen at the same time.
Okay.
Because urban holding has to be lifted in order for any development to go forward. And in order for urban holding to be lifted, the connections have to be reasonably funded. In order for them to be reasonably funded, we have to have, in part, the private partners contributing some of the work, some of the right-of-way and infrastructure that goes along with the agreement. So the development agreement that will set forth how it works and the urban holding lift go together.
And do we, so is there a way we can get a hearing on the schedule for us after the Planning Commission?
Certainly, I will work with the councilor's office and set that up as quickly as we can.
That's good to get out there for, you know, the legislators and everybody to know we're hauling on this.
I think the only, to maybe append one comment to Commissioner Bolt's question is, you know, I don't know, but is there a question about beyond just what this group is proposing? Is the county feeling like moving forward additional improvements sooner rather than later is a priority? And if so, I think the funding piece. You know, there may be a more holistic perspective to be taken on the county portion of the funding piece. Right. Do you just want to look at the gap between the private piece on this 20 plus million, or do you want to look at a little bigger and do it all at once? So that would be, I guess, a question at least popped into my mind based on some of the comments.
My perspective is I'll go back to the 139th discussion. I mean, we just kept the train moving, mm-hmm. and eventually the state came with us, you know. But if we don't keep the train moving.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think on the funding options, we can look at both. I think we have this immediate proposal that we want to digest, but at the same time, we know that Delfell is needed. We know there's other improvements on 179th that are needed. And then we will know relatively soon, are we going to build, is 15th Avenue needed, or can we use 12th? Mm-hmm. And then we could obviously come back to the council with a larger proposal, is that here's a package for these particular improvements that have been discussed, or if we wanted to move everything forward, here's the potential cost of all these improvements out here, and talk about funding that.
I just want to Councillor Bolt's point, I just want to make sure we keep the train moving.
Yes.
I mean, I've been sitting with these folks now since I got elected on this, and, and we have to see some traction here, mm-hmm. In my opinion.
Another question I have is, this is probably a comp plan or zoning question. So I'm encouraged to see commercial and retail developing out there because it is a key location and we need commercial and retail. And that has a payback in addition to residential. So if urban holding is lifted, will there be more land available for retail and commercial?
Councillor, the way for me to answer that is that the zoning is already in place in terms of what is zoned for land for jobs and what is zoned for rooftops, if you will. So we are not going to be proposing any change in zoning unless the applicants propose that. But the current zoning in place already accounts for the number of or areas zoned for job and areas zoned for residential. An applicant, as part of this process, can propose to for a zone change. That is not on the table. They're proceeding with how the area is currently zoned and planned for.
Sure. Thank you.
I want to go back to something Heath just said, and I want to follow up on how you meant that. You said when we determine whether we use 12th or whether we do 15th, what determines that? Are we talking about money? Are we talking about land? What are we talking about?
Traffic modeling is the primary.
And who does that?
So
we do it as a county?
Yeah, we're doing a combination. There's multiple pieces of that. We have the state model that we're working on. We have working with Kittleson, and then we have the county that's working on this. So my understanding is we're getting pretty close to having defining that.
Okay.
With the idea with this whole effort along the way has been, if we actually don't need to build, we don't need to build 15th. If that connection, this connection that's
doesn't
shown actually works,
I see.
Then,
okay.
Then we've taken a big piece of the pie off the chart, and so it was just an effort to explore that because we can move this section along a lot sooner.
So you're even saying for the future that 15th may never have to be done.
That's what we're looking at.
Okay.
Because if you look at that, there's some significant environmental mitigation that would have to take place on that particular.
And you know, we just, and the time that it takes to build something like that.
If we
look at 10th Avenue Bridge that we're building right now, it's a very similar crossing and length of bridge, and we started that project in 2010 design, and we just started building it last year. So the environmental processes that you need to go through, and that was ended up being $20 million, which by the time we get to this, it could be much more than what we're estimating.
Okay, thanks.
So we'll see what it turns out. It may show that ultimately we need to have this, and if that's okay, we'll proceed with that direction.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to staff and to all the folks here representing the private. I mean, we've been sitting in a lot of meetings, hours and hours of this, and I believe we're making progress, and you have my commitment to continue to do that and keep pushing, and I think we'll get somewhere. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take what you need.
So I'm not saying that, but it is an actual big deal.
Hi. See my graph?
I did.
See my graph?
I did. Let's see.
Good here.